Technorama episode 662, Footloose and Fancy Free. Hello and welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, sci-fi, all things geek. No, we won't.
Shatner.
If this is your first time joining us, welcome aboard. Happy that you're here. Whether you're watching on YouTube, Facebook, or listening to the podcast, hours, decades later, when the pandemic is in the past and we've all got flying cars and the robot invasion is under control, welcome to Technorama. What?
Again?
Well,
robot invasion center robot again?
Yeah, which robot invasion was it?
Yeah.
Robot invasion one or two?
Well, the first one was because of vacuums.
The first one was vacuum. Just known as the Great Robot Invasion until the second one happened.
Yeah, because they were cleaning our houses. And the second one, they actually were.
I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. I'm ready to podcast.
Well, good, because that's what we're here to do.
Yeah. You know, I don't know why. Today, I've been looking forward to this all day long.
You have?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not like we did one last week or something.
Yeah, we did one last week.
Yeah, we did. So, I don't know.
And we'll probably do another one next week. We'll get to that in a bit, but if you're around on Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern, we'd love to have you join us live on the live stream. We can do this on, like I said, Facebook and YouTube.
We can do this all day long.
Well, no, we can't. There is some prep
time. I'm quoting Steve Rogers.
let's go on to the feedback section. We asked you a question of the week last week. As soon as these people get done singing their song, we'll read the question and give you some responses.
Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters.
Yeah.
I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
The music also gives us time to click the links and pull up what those answers are.
Hey. Oh, crappy. You left us a bill again.
All right. We have John Miller Jr. Stupid says, mailman. Sponsored by Red Wine in a Box.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Question of the week last week was, if the internet existed in the 1920s, what kind of questions would people Google? And we got some answers. Thank you to our viewers and friends on Facebook and whatnot. We have Gary Lindro says, what is the best wax to use on your mustache?
I like that.
Is my gyrocopter overdue to land at the helioport?
Gyrocopter. How to ride a penny farthing. Oh, I used that one on the last show.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. What else you got?
Let's see. Steve London says, Spanish flu, government made and flu vaccine side effects. For YouTube, they would look at silent cat clips. Yeah.
Cranking them by hand. All,
yeah, they don't have to make noise. Just show me the cat.
Drop That's a right. penny in the machine and see a YouTube.
Right. I see a YouTube. Yeah, the little flip cards.
Right. The little guy dancing around.
It's like 2x speed. That's funny.
John Miller Jr. says, ways to stop those spammers from asking you about your car's extended warranty.
Right. That's true.
Wait.
John Kratzer said, huh?
What is this big gap in the comments between John Miller Jr. and John Kratzer?
Oh, it's a GIF. It's an animated GIF.
I do not see that. What's up with that?
Oh, there it is. Oh, it came up for a second. It's like a black and white old-timey cars.
Oh, okay. Around. Okay.
It didn't load exactly. That's kind of funny.
And what did John Kratzer say?
John Kratzer said, how to fix my Model T.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't get any responses to my share. Did you?
No.
Okay. Well, we'll let you know if anything comes in next week.
Our Facebook friends let us down.
Yeah. My response was, what was it? How to make bathtub gin? Illegal booze?
Yeah.
Where's the nearest speakeasy and what's the password? Oh, wait, they sell those on the dark net back then.
It's true.
We sell your speakeasy passwords. All right. Well, that was 20s. Fun.
What is Google? There you go.
We will have more at the end of the show. I'll have another question for you. Ponder carefully and choose wisely. Let's get on with the history. On this day in history for January 26th, 2022, this is the 26th day of the Gregorian calendar. There are 339 days remaining in 2022. It was on this date in 1788 that the British First Fleet, led by Arthur Phillip, sailed into Port Jackson, now known as Sydney Harbor, to establish Portsmouth, no, Sydney, the first permanent European settlement on Australia, commemorated as Australia Day. So happy Australia Day to all of you Aussies on January 26th.
That's right. And 96 years ago today, the first demonstration of the television by John Logie Baird.
Wait, why wasn't it demonstrated by the man himself? Philo Farnsworth.
What did they demonstrate? Yeah.
Well, Philo Farnsworth made television possible.
John Logie Baird's probably a salesperson. They keep the engineer
in
the
back. He was in marketing.
Salesperson. Yeah.
Let me demonstrate it if you want to sell some of these.
I bet you if I look him up, that's exactly what he does.
1949, on this day, January 26th, the Hale Telescope at Palomar Observatory saw first light under the direction of Edwin Hubble, becoming the largest aperture optical telescope until BTA-6 was built in 1976. Holy smokings. That was like 27 years between those two.
That's right. Also today in 1962, Ranger 3 was launched to study the moon. The moon probe later misses the moon by 22,000 miles.
Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing. If you're studying it, you don't want to hit the moon. You do want to go kind of alongside it. But
maybe
that was also part of their experiments to go, whew, we're going to have to
launch a mission to hit the moon. Remember, to kick up some space rock?
Yeah. But it could be that, you know, some of these early space probes to the moon were designed to determine how accurate their calculations were. Like, oh, we got to account for the wind.
Yeah, it was probably supposed to go into orbit and just kind of went. Anyway.
Close, but no cigar. All right. Happy birthday goes out in this date to American General Medal of Honor recipient Douglas MacArthur. He was born on this date in 1880.
And Polycarp Kuch.
Holy carp, American. Isn't that you?
Yeah. Holy carp.
Polycarp Kuch.
Yeah, German-American physicist and academic. Nobel Prize laureate was born on the same date in 1911.
Born his January 20th.
Hated him.
Polycarp.
Yeah.
Born January 26, 1921, Japanese businessman, co-founder of Sony Akio, co-founder of Sony, comma, needed there, Akio Morita.
There you go. I'll put it in there now.
Thank you.
American journalist and film critic Gene Siskel was born on this date in 1946.
And American mathematician Susan Friedlander was born 76 years ago today. Oh, no, she is 76 because she was born 76 years ago. Still right. Alive, according to our algorithm.
Right. And Eddie Van Halen, Dutch-American guitarist, songwriter and producer, was born on the same date in 1955.
Rest in peace, Eddie Van Halen. I didn't know he was actually Dutch-American.
I was kind of surprised when I just read that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a Dutch name. I knew that. But born, what would they be, 1 year later? Comedian, actress, and talk show host Ellen DeGeneres is 64 today.
And also turning 59 today is an English singer-songwriter and guitarist, Andrew Ridgely.
The other half of Wham. There was George Michael and Andrew Ridgely.
That's right.
So what's he done with his music career? Where are they now?
He's collecting residuals.
Technorama presents... Also born that same date in 1967, English businessman and co-founded the Internet Movie Database. Oh, we salute you, Colin Needham, for the Internet Movie Database. Oh, so many disputes are solved these days with IMDb.
Well, and it also helps play the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
I've seen this person somewhere before. I was just playing that with one of the things we'll talk about a little later. January birthdays and some February birthdays in our own birthday database. Would this be the Technorama birthday database, the TBDB? Can you see the heebie-jeebies? Yeah, right. Is Will the Computer Guy on the 26th, two birthdays on the 27th, Mark in Memphis. Oh, we haven't heard that in so long. Chip Burkhead from the Scotchcast is on the 27th. Also, Sarah P. from NJ, who was born in OK, moved to VA, married Brad P. from NJ, moved to NJ, and is now back in VA. If you followed that, send me a diagram. It looks like one of those criminal things with the yarn going all over the place. But happy birthday, yeah. Sarah P. Matt Baum, a.k.a. Racer X from Pittsburgh, PA, is on February 1st. Also on February 1st, our final birthday, Brandon Kirkwald from Minnesota. That's the way it was on this day in history for January 26, 2022. And if you want to get your name on our birthday calendar, the TBDB, I'm just going to use that now.
TBDB?
Technorama birthday database.
There you go.
TBDB. Go over to chuckjet.com/birthday. Hey, if Jonathan Strickland can change his little tagline, his intro after 15 years, he says, how the tech are you? We can tweak our show too.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. That's the way I was on the... I already did that line. So let's just play the music and get out of here. What? What was this, Gary?
I hope they're not having any
Facebook
trouble there.
Is phoning it in this week. And Gary said, I guess I'll get the next show. What, did he bail on us?
I don't even see his comment in here. Huh.
It's at the bottom. You might have to scroll. It's that little...
I'm trying to scroll off. Amy's on here.
Amy's on here. Amy says, speakeasy passwords are a better answer than I could have come up with. What's your speakeasy password? 2!3-g.
I thought you were going to say something like, the lady is cosmonaut. You know, and they open the door.
Oh, it's supposed to be one of those things where you like use the first letter from a song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, when we get the password training every year.
Actually,
I shot a man in Dallas.
This really isn't giving anything away, but I use words in mine with spaces, you know, different words. So, and a couple of symbols and stuff go along with it.
We're going to talk security now. Is this a security cast all of a sudden?
That's right.
No,
but I find it's easier to have about three words and spaces and some characters, and it's easy to remember.
I got a few words for you. I have some that are based off of the first letter of each word of a song or
yeah. But then I got to think about it.
No,
if you just have the letters, you just type them out.
Wow, that was profound, Craig. Because passwords are made of letters.
Words. If you had. It's like typing a sentence real quick.
I was talking to my parents today, and they said, you know, we were talking about those embarrassing moments where you meet somebody, but you can't remember their name, and you usually remember a lot of other things about them, like where you met and, you know, the last, but for the life of you, you can't figure out the name. And my parents said, well, fortunately for us, we don't have to remember this anymore because all our friends are dead.
Oh.
I said, I need that on a shirt. Remembering names is not a problem for me. All my friends are dead.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And it was totally out of context, but it was pretty funny. Yeah. And my mom just kind of backpedals. She goes, no, that's not what we were talking about.
Right.
Amy says, Reno. That's what it was. I was singing the Johnny Cash song, Shot a Man in Reno.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell that's not one of my karaoke favorites.
I actually jumped in the last few minutes of your karaoke. I think you wrapped up right when I started watching it.
Last week? Yes, you did.
Yeah, last week.
All right, here's a plug. If anybody, you know, like the five people that are on this podcast aren't already aware, Saturday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, Facebook and YouTube. Similar concept to this. Only I sing a half dozen or so songs from a specific year, and that'll give you history and trivia from that year as well. So that's always fun. Spend an hour.
Sometimes I try to jump in. Sometimes, you know, Kim and I are doing something and it's kind of hard to getting all the time.
I got some good ones from 1979 coming up next weekend.
Yeah, you never did my request.
You haven't found me music for your request yet.
Oh, Tiptoe Through the Tulips?
Oh, no, I can do Tiptoe Through the Tulips. That's a no-brainer.
What year was that? That was...
Early 70s, maybe late 60s, Tiny Tim. Not the one from A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens.
No, I was talking about the Tiny Tim one. I was trying to look for the year.
Well, you look for that. I'm going to play some news. We'll just take this
68.
One.
Top secret news, everyone.
Yeah, we did 68. 1968 months ago. Try to keep
up. I know. Well, yeah, 10 weeks ago or whatever.
Well, more than 10 weeks because we took a few off for the holidays and whatnot. Okay.
Wait a minute. Are you doing a year?
Basically a year a week, but like this past Saturday, Packers were in the playoffs. We'll never talk about that again. We're in the playoffs. All right, on to the news. Let's talk about something that our listeners might actually care about. We've got a story about Starlink. And while Starlink is generally a good thing, it is causing some problems because the more satellites they send up, the more streaks appear in space images. Mm-hmm. And they're at about 2,000 satellites deployed now out of 10,000. And the amount of streaks from said satellites, they are in low Earth orbit. So generally, they only are a problem in the evening and morning hours. Because low Earth orbits, the satellites only reflect right before sunrise or right after sunset. In the middle of the night, they're not a problem because they're going in the shadow of the Earth, so they're not reflecting any light.
Right.
But many more satellites are going to be deployed in the future, not necessarily by Starlink, but by others that are in higher orbit, and those will become a problem throughout the nighttime observing. And they said, nobody really thought of this. They're saying that it's... The percentage is up, and you go take a picture of this wonderful galaxy, and there's like this white scratch right through the picture.
Terry, you didn't clean the lens again.
It's like one of those old timey wimey film where you see the line moving around.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a problem.
Interesting. Go ahead.
Well, they've asked Starlink and other satellite providers in the future to consider. Not just necessarily painting them dark, but also like some baffles or louvers that would cause the thing to like self-shade itself.
Starlink's already got that. They started putting them out in, I think the article said 2020,
2018,
where it had some visors.
Oh
yeah. They had some visors that will kind of try and block it. And they said it did help, but not, extensively, but I'm sure there's room to grow on that.
In 2019, this meant satellite streaks in less than 0.5% of all twilight images. But by August 2019, that had escalated to 18%. Okay, that's a jump like 36 times.
Yeah, it's going to get worse. They're actually supposed to have, I think they asked, I don't know what the final number was. It was like 22,000 satellites.
Well, Starlink is targeted at 10,000 by the year 2025, according to this article.
I think ultimately they want 20,000, 22,000.
That's a lot of stuff flying around up there.
I know. It makes me nervous thinking you just get one out of place, and I think you got a cascading problem there. But I don't know. I thought it was interesting that they actually do try to mask out the pixels, and produce a good image, but they said that there's the potential that one of those pixels is covering an asteroid.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hiding behind the, and that's a possibility.
If my Photoshop mask just masked out an asteroid coming towards Earth.
It's fine.
Yeah. It'd be fine.
And those are the hard ones to see too, when they're coming from the direction of the sun, which is where you would typically be looking just before sunrise or just after sunset. So yeah. So all is not rosy with sending out many, many, many more satellites.
Right.
We'll have to do more space observing, AKA James Webb. Okay. Let's go on to the next one. What have you got?
All right. So NASA detects FM radio signals coming from Ganymede, and it's not Wolfman Jack or anything like that, but
you're listening to Ganymede Radio 24/7. Jupiter's hottest moon station.
You stole my joke. Anyway, it said less than a week after the Juno mission was officially re-extended for another 5 years, it has hit headlines again with its massive discovery. It found FM radio signals coming from Ganymede. And these signals, they call it a decametric radio emission, which is actually known by a more widespread name as
Wi-Fi.
That's right. So it's on the frequency of Wi-Fi. The actual source, they believe, is caused by electrons that are oscillating slower than the normal rate, and it's causing this phenomenon to happen.
I think the electrons on this...
It's called cyclotron maser instability. That's what it stands for.
I think my doctor diagnosed me with that.
Yeah, my cyclotron. Wasn't he on Futurama?
Cyclotron maser instability. If you've got cyclotron maser instability, see your doctor.
4 hours. Yeah, if you have for 4 hours.
Careful. Like the electrons on this podcast are oscillating slower than their normal rate.
Yeah.
Well, this is pretty cool. Now, they only had, like, what was it, 5 seconds or so of the actual broadcast, if you want to call it that, because Juno, which was actually extended for another 5 years, hooray, was flying through a field of Ganymede. They said, this is awesome. We need to get more exploration of Ganymede up there because this is really cool stuff. And the more they explore, the more they learn, and the more they learn, the more they want to explore. So this was just a tiny glimpse into something. We may get a mission to Ganymede at some point in the future.
Yeah, and what were the other discoveries that they said? One of them was, of course, the underground oceans, which they said are much deeper than even, 10 times deeper than the United States, than the Earth.
Than the Earth. Deeper oceans. Buried under 150 kilometers of ice. And they also found, what did they call them? There's like magnetic fields that they can cause aurora. So that's kind of cool. A moon has this kind of stuff going on.
Well, hey, we saw the Rebel Alliance hanging out on the moon of Yavin.
So great documentary. If you haven't caught it, you got to watch it.
And it had a big forest on it too. So
who knew Disney Plus had documentaries?
Endor,
like that?
You know, moon of Endor. Anyway, never mind. All right. I'll stop now.
What did Mike Robeson say? More likely to be smooth jazz.
Yeah. Da, 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 da. And now for more smooth jazz.
This is
on Radio Ganymede.
Your Jovian choice on your FM dial. Okay.
I remember.
With that article? Go ahead.
One time, I hope my friend Mark didn't get on me for saying this. One time I was spending the night at his house. His dad had fallen asleep on the couch. We were walking through the living room, and of course, there he is sleeping. He went to sleep with the radio, and it was like, with the radio on, and it was like one of the slower classical stations. But I swear to God, that time of night, it sounded like they were playing Whale Song. I was like, what are they doing on the radio? Oh, I just remember that. Like walking through the living room going, what the hell is they listening to?
You sure it wasn't like those Chinese bells that sort of ring?
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
No.
I like that stuff. Like, well, that's nice.
I know, because I saw the other documentary called Star Trek where they had to go get the whales and bring them back.
And yeah, we already did the captain. We already did Finding Nemo. Thank you. Sure wish I could speak whale. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on to a more serious story.
Yeah.
We have an article from CNN about a black diamond that is 555.55 carats. And will be sold. It apparently came from space. It's believed to come from space because of the inclusions that are in it. Mm-hmm. So this is a rather large diamond. I would, based on the pictures that we're looking at, say it's probably about 7 or 8 centimeters from top to bottom, like 2.5, maybe 3 inches. Pretty.
Actually, the picture made it look huge.
Well, yeah, maybe it's a very small lady.
Right.
Could be that.
I mean, look at her hand. It's like she's holding it like this. Well,
some of that might be forced perspective too. We don't know. But anyway, this is supposed to sell for as much as 5 million pounds or $6.8 million. And it is, what did they say? It's either created from a meteoric impact or from a diamond-bearing asteroid that collided with Earth. So it's a natural faceted black diamond. That means nobody cut this thing. It came this way. It's got nice little flat surfaces all over. It's not jagged in any way.
Estimated, no, they did cut it.
Okay.
Because they said the shape of the diamond is inspired by the Middle Eastern
palm. Right.
Of Hamsa, a sign of protection, which means five in Arabic.
And the number five is all throughout this thing, including, you know, the carats, 555.55, and it has 55 facets.
But I can guarantee you they didn't cut much off of it.
Probably.
You know, because that would be, in itself, would be a shame. But I don't know. That's pretty big.
Pretty rare, too. I mean, it's going to be, what did they say? It's called a carbonado diamond. That's what you call these black diamonds from, well, not necessarily the ones from space. Estimated between 2.6 and 3.8 billion years old. And they know it's from space because it has trace amounts of nitrogen and hydrogen, elements that are found in interstellar space, and also osbornite, which has nothing to do with Ozzy Osbourne. It's a mineral present in meteorites.
Somebody made that up.
No, it's called osbornite.
Right. Well, this either came from space or it came from Ferris Bueller's friend Cameron.
He said, Mike says that the diamond is probably full of Triffid seeds. Okay. No, I don't think it is. You can almost see through it. It's a beautiful gem. I'm not willing to pay that much for it.
Wow. Benefits from work have been pretty good for you.
If you are interested in bidding on this, you can bid online at, was it Sotheby's that's having the auction? February 3rd to 9th.
Look, there's another picture of her holding it to her face.
That's what I said.
It's as big as her nose, if not bigger.
Bigger.
It is bigger.
And she doesn't have a ginormous nose. I'm not sure that's what I would compare it to.
I mean, look, well, I'm saying from the top of her lip to her eyes. I mean, that whole thing, that's a good size.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Rare space gems. I want one, but I'm not going to pay that much. I'm going to go look in the backyard, see what I can find.
Valentine's is coming up.
That takes care of it for the news. No.
Hey, Donald, look what I got. I won't tell you how much it costs, but...
we don't have any money left in our account anymore. Yeah. And we owe a little bit.
All of them. Matter of fact, they're coming to get the house. This is to pack up.
This is our retirement.
Yeah.
This one rock. But it's an investment, so it should appreciate. That's it for the news. Next, we've got our Hacks and Strange Stories. And
this is cool.
Well, go ahead. Lead us in. What have you found?
So Elon Musk's name appears in a 69-year-old book.
Sort of.
Space travel.
Sort of.
I know, sort of. But anyway, but his name did appear in there, sort of. Tech billionaire Elon Musk promised to bring humans to Mars by 2024, which...
How's that working out for you?
Yeah, but his mission was it predicted 70... years ago?
No, possibly. This is sensationalized headlines from Greek reporter, not even Geek he reporter.
He tweeted, destiny, and there's no escaping. But a fan replied, well, speaking about destiny, did you know that Wernher von Braun's 1953 book, Mars Project, referenced a person named Elon that would bring humans to Mars? Pretty nuts.
Not quite. Let me tell you what it really said. Okay.
Okay.
Someone who did the translation a little bit better said, yes, The word Elon, E-L-O-N, is in there. It doesn't say anything about Musk, so...
well, maybe the way he smells, I don't know.
It doesn't... The Elon referred to by Von Braun in the book isn't the name of the person, but rather the name of the position, something like an electric... Right. An elected president in a meritocracy. So... It was a matter of interpretation. If you read the English part of the article, it says the Martian government was directed by 10 men, the leader of whom was elected by universal suffrage for 5 years and entitled, quote, Elon. Two houses of parliament enacted the laws to be administered by the Elon and his cabinet. So it'd be like...
Hey, it is printed. It's kind of neat, though.
It'd be like saying Caesar. Hey, that's my name.
No, I mean, it's kind of interesting that it, you know, the either the position or the name showed up in there.
Yeah, and to have that linkage to Wernher von Braun is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's almost like Nostradamus came down from heaven and said, hey, put this name in here. Just
no, don't put Nostradamus into this thing.
Yes, Nostradamus.
But the, you know, I thought it was pretty neat from that aspect. Where he came up with this name, I don't know. Maybe that word has been around before.
His own name?
No, to that Von Braun used as a title of someone in a leadership position.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a German. Is it German?
The document was originally in German. Now, for those listeners who don't remember, Wernher von Braun was originally German. He was part of the Nazi rocket program. Was in charge of like their V1 and V2 rocket programs. Then at the end of the war, we spirited him and about 1,600 other engineers to America to work on Project Paperclip, which was our own rocketry program because we knew the Russians had gotten a whole bunch of engineers as well. So that's where the space race came from. So, and if you listen to one of our old Technorama interviews with our good family friend, Bud Thacker, go into the archives. Mm-hmm. And I asked him at one point, I said, did you know Wernher von Braun? He said, yeah, we used to work together for a while. So
that's right.
Bud was part of the Delta II launch program.
So, God, I almost forgot about that.
It's
been a long time since we...
What does that make us? 1 degree separated from Wernher von Braun? I think that's pretty damn special.
Closer than Kevin Bacon.
Which, wait a minute, that would make us 2 degrees separated from Hitler. I don't think we're not going to promote that.
Let's stop while we're ahead. Right.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So that is our Hacks and Strange Stories. Very interesting, but not Elon's just kind of playing it up, but it was a sensationalized.
No, he did. Well, no, somebody replied to his tweet and said, hey, did you know?
Yeah.
You know, they probably knew about it for a year. I can't wait till he says something I can reply and say, yes. Did you know?
All hail the Elon.
Yeah.
That's what's going to come to at some point. All right. Quick shout out to the chat room. We do this show Sundays at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday nights. I think I probably just repeated myself in some way, shape, or form. Facebook and YouTube and Facebook, since we're in a repeating mode anyway. You can join our Facebook page. You get notified when we go broadcast, and we put that up live. If you do notifications on YouTube, dare we say it, like and subscribe. Okay.
Yeah, why not?
Sure.
Everybody says, hey, I was in a meeting the other day, and somebody said, well, not to plug my own stuff, but I do have a class built for ITSM or something. I said, like and subscribe. I said that in a meeting.
Right.
Everybody busted out laughing.
So shout out to the people that are joining us this Sunday. We had Gary in there. You've seen some comments come up on the screen if you've been watching us online. But Gary Lindros and John Miller Jr., Amy Bowen, a lot of these are our Patreon people. Thank you very much. Right. We'll get to that in a second. And Mike Robeson. I thought we had another one.
Ralph Wengler
was in there also. Yes, thank you very much. Here, Ralph says, good evening, friends. Oh, that's nice. I didn't know that about StreamYard, that if you have a banner going and you put up a comment, the banner gets hidden. Smartly hides them during the course of that.
It should, because it'd look crappy if it was all
Well, when you do the other ones, they don't hide. the brand overlays. Mm. Yeah. So another reason we should be using banners and not brand overlays. There we are. Should we do a Remember When?
Sure, why not?
All right, we have a number of things to talk about from the TV and movie scene in just a little bit. But first, we'll give you the Remember When. What are the oldest fossils in the world? And that is a very good question. I thought I...
And that does not include us.
You know, no. Although we're in the running, they didn't mention us in this article from Discover Magazine. Right. Now, I noticed the picture, and as soon as I saw it, I said, wait a minute, I thought stromatolites were the oldest thing in the world. But there are some things up for debate in here, one of which is a discovery. Well, I don't know if you call it a discovery, but there's life is believed to date back several billion years at least, and some of the earliest stuff that we have from that time wasn't exactly preserved in fossils. You know, squishy bacteria microbe things, you just can't pull out of a rock like you can a dinosaur bone. So this guy named Schopf, what was his first name? I can't remember. Didn't find it in here. But he said there's parts of the whole way that plate tectonics works is, you know, things are laid down in sediment or on the face of the earth. And due to plate tectonics, they can be subducted or thrust up or destroyed by erosion, whatever it is. And it's really hard to find old rocks. You know, rocks older than 3.5 billion years can be found in a few places like Western Australia, Greenland, and South Africa. And Schopf and his colleagues, well, they found these worm-like patterns preserved in what they call apex chert, not yurt. That's one of those huts that the Mongols live in.
Circular.
Right, no.
Circular huts.
It's a rock formation in Australia dating back to about 3.465. Hey, that's our zip plus four number. I just realized that.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, 85022 3465. 3.465 billion years ago. My brain in numbers. It's a funny thing. Well, they said, well, this might be one of the oldest things. And they said, well, yeah, possibly, because they said during this time, the planet didn't have oxygen. We didn't have oxygen early on. That was created plants.
Had all the stuff, but it wasn't all congealed yet.
Well, what's even neater, and I hadn't thought about this yet, is that it said ancient iron didn't rust. It's like, that's a telltale sign that you have oxygen in the atmosphere. Anything older than 3 billion years ago, there was no oxygen, so it didn't rust. And as you get towards 2.8 billion and 2.3 billion to 2.5 billion years ago, that's when you have more oxygen in the atmosphere. So they know when the atmosphere started turning around. Well, the organisms older than 3 billion years old may have produced more like methane rather than oxygen. I thought that was cool. Then they get to my favorite.
Cool.
Stromatolites. And they said, well, stromatolites are affectionately known as, they're researchers believe that cyanobacteria, which is a blue-green algae, often called that just for familiarity. It's not actually algae, though. It's only like a millimeter or two high, and it creates this carpet over like a rocky structure. And as sediment and stuff falls in here, well, the next generation builds on top of that. And you get this layered effect. And they found stromatolites that are, you can still see them in Shark Bay in Australia. And they're believed to go back as far as 3.7 billion years old. So a lot of science shows.
That first picture? That's the first picture?
Yes, those are the stromatolites in Shark Bay in that first picture. They just look like these snow
balls. Look like a bunch
snow
of
blobs. Yeah. Almost like a field of giant puffball mushrooms. I mean, these stromatolites can be several feet in diameter. So they're pretty cool, but they're very, very delicate. I mean, if you took your hand and wiped the surface, you'd be you'd be doing some serious damage. However, there's been some debate whether those are the oldest ones. He says even Schopf is skeptical about some of these supposed ancient traces of life, which believes may be the result of ripple marks. They were talking about another one in rocks in Labrador, Canada, containing microfossils dating back 3.95 billion years ago. But those claims are disputed. They say, well, it could just be ripples in the sand that were captured that way. It doesn't necessarily mean there was life at that time. So there is more to learn. It's, like I said, it's hard to get evidence from some of these really, really old life forms because they were often like bacteria. Unless you're not, and even the stromatolites that we see in the fossil record, I think they found these in South Africa. You're not actually looking at fossils of the stromatolites. You're looking at the layers of rock that they put down or that they absorbed in from falling sediments and whatnot. So it's an interesting field and it's got to be tricky to study. But you know what they could do?
What's that?
You know how the further out in space you look, the further back in time you're seeing things? Because the speed of light, let's say you're looking at something from one light year away. You're looking at the light from that star from a year ago. What if we flew a telescope out 13 million, well, the 4 billion years ago, because our solar system is not 13 billion years old, but you fly a rocket out 5 billion light years away, and then you just look back at the Earth and go, oh, I see what... Never mind. It was a stupid joke. You don't have to agree that easily.
Yeah, I agree.
Move on. All right, we're moving on to the patrons. Okay. Patrons are the people who donate to the show. They say, hey, this is fun. This is funny. This is entertaining. This is educational. I like it, and it's worth a buck to me. And we thank you for that, because for as little as a dollar a show, Mike Robeson, I like eggs. It was aliens. Yes, aliens left the fossils. Back to the Patreon people.
I'm not saying it was aliens, but it's aliens.
We, in turn, use that money as wisely as possible to fund the live stream, to make sure that we have hosting bandwidth and capacity and disk storage for shows dating back to 3.8 billion years ago. Because, you know, Technorama is that old in terms of podcast years.
They're old as the stromatolites.
Oh, well, in terms of podcasting, yes, we are that old. And those wonderful, wonderful people include the names like Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, who is in our chat this evening, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, who we checked before the show. He's looking to get on next week's show. We'll see if we can get him on the show next week. Chris MC, Dan D-Man Coyer, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, thank you. Gary Lindros, who's also in the chat. We mentioned his name. John Clifford, John Nobles. These people are so excited to be part of the show. They are literally part of the show. Jorgis Rowan, Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle. And you know what? If you show up on the show, whether you're a Patreon person or not, we'll likely put your chat on the screen like we did theirs. Mike Wills, Chris Martinez, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshy, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Sweet Steve London. Sponsored by the Planet Alderaan, now known as Reese's Pieces. Ow!
Too soon.
Yeah, no kidding. So, if you want to be part of this elite group, this proud group that gets their name on the show.
The A-Team.
This group that gets an exclusive podcast that Craig and I record right after this. It's kind of an after show, which is ironic because it's released before this episode that you're listening to now. What a mixed up world we live in. You can go to patreon.com/technoramapodcast and we will do our best to get that out to you. So thank you. Thank you very much to all the Patreon people. Okay. Out you go, band.
See you later.
Hit the abort button about four times just to make
sure
we got
that. Don't let the door hit
you. And that means, how are we doing on time? We're doing all right. Craig and I have apparently been watching a lot of shows, so we're going to muscle our way through these. Stick around with us. This is the segment. Music, 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 music. Segment of the show we call Pass Me the Remote, or is it sometimes referred to as Hand Me the Remote. I have handmetheremote.mp3, but in the show notes, it's labeled Pass Me the Remote. We'll figure that out at our next staff meeting. So I've got a couple. Let's just take turns. What do you say?
Sure.
See how far That's we fine. Get in the next 15 minutes or so, because this is the bulk of what we've got at the end of the show. First one I've got is an episode or a series of 8 shows on Netflix called Archive 81. And this is...
I saw that floating around. I'm curious what that was.
It's about a gentleman who restores and digitizes old tapes and movies and videos and whatnot. And he's called up by the CEO of this rather enigmatic company called LMG and said, hey, I've got some tapes from a fire that I would like you to restore. And as he's restoring them, he starts uncovering these mysterious things. The bulk of the videos are this woman from 1994 who is doing a PhD dissertation on a specific building. And she starts coming across some really mysterious stuff about the building, its inhabitants. And the pace of the show is a bit slow. But it's like the first Alien movie was kind of slow. But that was part of it.
But it was slow.
It was because, well, they're great at cliffhangers to keep you sucking up the next one.
Yeah.
But it was interesting.
Oh, wait, this is a series.
This is a series of 8 shows.
Okay.
And as you're going through the show, you know, they purposely make it slow because she's holding this camcorder and a lot of what he sees, of course, everything he sees is through the restored video of that camcorder. My only problem with the show is that a lot of times she's walking with the camcorder. You know, when you used to hold those handheld camcorders in the 90s and whatnot, you had to keep your hand straight up. So the lens was pointing straight forward. Well, she lets her hand drop for a lot of it. So whoever's watching this is going to hear a lot, but they're going to see shoes, floor, bookcase, whatnot. That kind of got on my nerves as someone who does photography and videography. hold the thing up for crying out loud if you're making this.
Right.
But she interviews some of the tenants of the building and she uncovers this rather interesting group. And then she goes, well, what are you guys doing? And there's like many good stories. There's clues throughout the stories that you won't recognize until the end. You go, oh, that's what that was for. Right. So you start to question the guy's sanity. His name's Dan. Dan, as he's restoring these videos and watching him going, what did I just see? What just happened? There are some supernatural aspects to it. So you're going to have to suspend disbelief and go, okay, I'll go with that for the story. Because some of it is a little over the top, but it lends itself well to the storyline itself. I liked this. Out of 1 to 10, I'd give this, in terms of storytelling and the cinematography, the storyline itself, I'd give it an 8.5. It was
really?
Well done.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, so we're doing ratings now.
We have been doing ratings.
On the topic of Trek, not here.
No, we've been doing it on here since we started Pass Me the Remote. You may not remember them. You might not have been writing them down.
Okay. All right. It doesn't matter.
Okay. What's your first one?
So, all right. So, Kim and I both watched this. This is The Tender Bar, which is on Amazon Prime.
Not the Tinder Bar. Tender Bar.
Tinder. Tinder, like T-E-N-D-R.
Not the dating app Tinder.
No. I wasn't even going to bring it up, but thanks. Anyway.
When I was reading this at first, I thought I said The Tender Bear. I'm like, what are you watching? Care Bears?
No.
This is Tender Bear.
Yeah. No, this is George Clooney directed this. It's based off a memoir. The Tender Bar follows an aspiring writer who is played by Ty Sheridan. His name is JR, and everybody asks him, what does the JR stand for? But he's pursuing a romantic and professional career, but both to varying degrees of success. But it follows his life from when he was hanging out in his uncle's bar. His dad was a deadbeat, jerk, but he was hanging out with his mom and staying at her mom's family house with the grandfather. And it's like everybody was living in the house. And Ben Affleck was the uncle and he was kind of teaching him how to be a man. Was really more of a father to him than his dad, for all intents and purposes. So this is a really good movie. I think Ben Affleck nailed it. The music was great. Also in this movie, the musical choices. So this was a win. I really enjoyed this.
How would you categorize this? Was it a drama? Was it rom-com? Was it?
No. It wasn't a rom-com. It's more, it's a, It's based off a memoir, so it's about his life. So I guess a little more on the drama side.
Pseudo documentary.
I don't even know how to classify it.
Well, you said it was based off a memoir, so
yeah. So it's got
historical basis in it.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, but yeah, it's really good. So I'd enjoy it. From 1 to 10, I give this I'm gonna say 8.5. I think say 8.5.
That was a firm voting system there.
I was debating between 8.5 and 9, so somewhere in there. So, but it was really good. Okay. It's on Amazon Prime, so go check it out.
All right, next one I've got is the final season of The Expanse. The Expanse started on the Sci-Fi Channel, made its way over to Amazon Prime. For whatever reason, I wrote Netflix in there, which is incorrect. I just realized that, so we'll fix that. When we get a chance, Amazon Prime. There we are. Thrilling podcast, listening to people type words.
Yeah.
If you haven't already seen The Expanse, I encourage you to do so. If you enjoyed, maybe you've seen some of... I would liken this to like the Battlestar Galactica 2006
series.
From what
I've seen, it's like Battlestar Galactica, sort of.
And the story moves along from what they were first interested in the first season about the proto-matter and what is it and what did it do to people. And then the whole story about the Belters and their struggle for recognition and equality. Mm-hmm. It really made for an interesting story. They did have to address a character issue or an actor issue in late season 5. Then season 6 came out a few weeks ago, and I finally wrapped that up, and I would say they did a fine job wrapping up this season. I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but very good. This is probably some of the best sci-fi we've had outside of Star Trek in a long, long time, probably the last 10 years, I would say.
Hmm.
So The Expanse, okay. I'm gonna give this an 8.5.
Oh, okay. Great. The next one I've got is The Electrical Life of Lewis Wayne. And this stars Benedict Cumberbatch. He plays an artist who kind of builds this repertoire for almost like psychedelic cats. He changed the way people perceived cats. I'll read you the thing. It says the true story of eccentric British artist Lewis Wayne, whose playful psychedelic pictures transformed the public's perception of cats forever. Set in the early 1900s, we follow Wayne, who seeks to unlock the electrical mysteries of the world, and in doing so, to better understand his own life and the profound love he shared with his wife, Emily Richardson. It was really cool. I thought it was a pretty good story. It was a little bit slow at times, but I enjoyed it. So I would say check it out. The art was really interesting, especially at the end. They show a bunch of it during the credits. So be sure to kind of watch that for a little bit.
So if you're into cat videos, this is the one.
Hey, what else is fun? Yeah, right. What else is funny was I saw Richard Ayoade, you know, from the IT Crowd.
Yes.
And what's funny is, he had a suit on and his hair was slicked down. And I was like, I said, wait, was that
Moss?
Richard Ayoade? Yeah. Moss, what happened to you? So anyway, it was just a brief thing. I just thought it was funny.
It's too soon, Roy. That. It's too soon.
Yes. Yeah, too soon.
So what would you rate this?
Oh, yeah, we're doing the rating still. I'm gonna give this a 7.5.
All right.
I thought it was really, yeah, pretty good.
That was also on Amazon Prime, by the way.
That's true.
My third and final one is Oats Studio. This is on Netflix. It's an anthology ranging anywhere from a varying range of these videos. Could be 25 minutes, I think, was the longest. Maybe 30 minutes was the first and second ones were longer. And I think the last one was longer, too, to about 5 minutes. And this is a very bizarre, eclectic thing. It ranged anywhere. Sigourney Weaver was in the first one, and it was about, hey, the aliens have invaded and they've taken over the Earth. And it's just like this slice into a movie There's no real conclusion. There's no real intro. So you're figuring out who the characters are and what they're doing and their motivation. And I mean, obviously it's easy to go, oh, the aliens. Yeah, they're battling aliens and, you know, shoot,
hey, we're
bang,
not
bang,
saying
pew,
aliens,
pew.
But aliens.
And they made some pretty good aliens on these things with like snake-headed, biped sort of impervious to gunshot wounds sort of thing. The there are some comedic ones in there. There's a three or four part section called Cooking with Bill.
Okay.
And it's like this 90s infomercial. Welcome to Cooking with Bill. It looks like it's more out of Kentucky Fried Movie than it is out of, like, how does this fit it? I mean, you're watching them shoot aliens in this very dystopic environment, and then you switch to Cooking with Bill, and he's showing off these newfangled gadgets, you know, the latest tech. It's what I really want to show is the, you know, Dice Master 950, whatever it was. It looks like this chainsaw with a million blades and slicing and dicing, and it's so contrived, it's hysterical. They've got another one that's got two segments called Bad President. There's another comedy section called God, where you've got God sitting in this big, you know, like drawing room, and he's got a section of Earth out in front of him, and he says, "Oh, what are they doing right now? Oh, look at them, they're running from the fire." And Jeffrey, his manservant, he's like, "Jeffrey, throw a match on that building." And so like, God is, you know, burning down buildings and killing cavemen. And it's right. Like, this is messed up. This is seriously messed up. But it is so funny. Oates Studio. I'm going to give
Mike
this.
Mike says, are aliens doing dance numbers?
Not on my show.
Yeah.
So Oates Studio on Netflix, I highly encourage this. For one, from the sci-fi standpoint, they did a great job. I would like to see some of these little clips fleshed out into full-scale movies. And the other, from the comedic standpoint, I think they struck both of them very well.
Really?
I'm giving
Where are you finding these? Because you're finding all the good stuff.
It comes up on my recommendations, man. I don't know where this stuff comes from.
Wow. So
sometimes it's because I watch other things that are related. Sometimes it's like, I think you'll enjoy this. Sometimes it's, hey, this is new. So their algorithm is clearly working on me. I give this one a 9. I love it.
Okay. Wait, do you go back in and thumbs up or thumbs down things?
I always forget. Forget.
Well, so you're not feeding the algorithm.
No, well, they know what you watch. They know if you watch it all the way through, you must have liked it.
No, I disagree with that.
You could have fallen asleep on this. I remember the socks we talked about?
The socks?
The Netflix socks. If you asleep, the socks would determine you fell asleep and they'd pause Netflix.
Actually, I just needed a shock so I can wake back up. So my wife didn't catch me sleeping during a movie.
Okay, what's your last one?
All right, so I did watch the Harry Potter 20th anniversary special, Return to Hogwarts. And really, I didn't really intend to watch it, but it was just kind of sitting in front of me, and I hit play. And it was really nice. It was weird because I read a review later, and I think it kind of summed up my feelings as well. And that is that Harry Potter 20th anniversary special, 20th seems a little early for a reunion for this kind of thing.
We just celebrated the 25th anniversary of Voyager. What are you talking about?
I don't know. It just seemed like it was a little early. It seemed like everybody was still fresh. You know, I mean,
20 years.
I know.
These actors are in their 30s now.
I know they are. I know. Anyway, I'm just saying it did feel a little soon, but I thought it was very sweet. And, you know, sometimes, you know, lots of times you'll get actors and they go, oh, they were so much fun to work with, or they were really on their craft. You know, they always talked up the other people. But I will say, between Daniel, Emma, and Rupert, I got the feeling that a lot of that is genuine, that because they did grow up with each other through those 10 years they were, you know, putting together these movies. There was especially a sweet moment when it was just Rupert and Emma, and she was talking about, you know, growing up with everybody, and Rupert said, well, we watch each other grow up, and he started to well up in tears, and he said, he basically told her, we're family. We'll always be with each other, or we're stuck with each other. And he says, and Emma, I truly love you. And she started tearing up, and it was a genuine moment. Then they broke the moment, and he said, as a friend, not before anybody took it the wrong way. But it was a sweet moment. Yeah, but it was those kind of things I like to see. It was good. There was a lot of behind the scenes stuff. A lot of the actors, they talked about the actors that aren't with us, or crew people, I should say, in general, because it wasn't just actors that passed away. Yeah. And they mentioned them. And then a lot of back behind the scenes, and you see them talking about moments like Daniel and Gary Oldman. We're talking about scenes that they shot and how they were thinking about it at the time. And they actually had a good working relationship too. And a lot of people commented that you could see when they were working together that they kind of grew together, sort of like their characters did, you know. Sirius Black wasn't as bad as they made him out to be as a character. And he was kind of not a father figure, more like an uncle to Harry. So, and that's the kind of the way they were in real life as well. It was really cool how a lot of their characters kind of molded into how they are as people in a way. So go check it out. Like I said, I felt like it was, why didn't they wait to 25 years or more? I don't know. Just kind of weird, but.
All right. What do you rate it?
I'm going to give that a 7.5. That's a, you know.
Okay.
But it was really good.
And you, on a related note, I'm sure you heard the news that Daniel Radcliffe will be playing Weird Al.
Yes.
Not sure how I figure that one's going to work, but.
Well, there was a Funny or Die video a while back, and Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad was playing Weird Al. And that's kind of where that came from. The director that put that together had this idea of the Weird Al story, and that's where this came from. So they got Daniel Radcliffe. And I posted on Facebook, thank God Gary Busey wasn't available.
He's a little old.
No, but he's as ridiculous as Daniel Radcliffe. Right?
I don't know.
I think it'd be fun.
I think it'd be fun. You know, Daniel's done a lot of serious roles. Maybe it's time for a comedic one.
I did like Weird Al's comment about the thing. He said, when I put out UHF, I swore that every 33 years I would put out a new film. So it's like clockwork. Here we go.
like Halley's Comet.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it.
Alrighty, that takes us to the end of our Pass Me the Remote section. And we have one last question for you that we will socialize on social media next week.
Put on the reverb. Question of the week.
Do it again.
Question of the
Nicely done. Hopefully that made it out on the feed all right.
It sounded a little weird to me, but okay.
Well, you just say it. Let the words take their effect. What's a very old game that's 100% worth it to play now? Now, we didn't necessarily say video game. It could be a board game. Could be a card game.
I had...
Could be as simple as got your nose.
I had hopscotch. London Bridge.
Hopscotch with real scotch. Single malt. That's
right. You take two hops and then you throw one back.
Right. Until you can't hop anymore.
Yeah.
Just falling down. Okay. Well, that was a fun topic. Let's ruin another one. D&D. Spinning the bottle. Who's your daddy? Let's play the DNA test game.
Hey, sometimes that's not a game.
All right. We're going to end it here before we get ourselves kicked off the internet for good. Pull my finger. You're on the right track. I went with got your nose. That game never gets 100% worth it to play every time you get. Pull my finger.
Yeah.
Okay. Ooh, that hurt. You know what that music means. It's time to get out of here. If you want to get in touch with us, Craig, roll that title. It says, call the listener line, 707-530-2428. We have not had any feedback in a while, but we'd love to hear from you. 707-5302. Yep, the line still works. I checked it out recently. Or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com, if you want to be part of the show. Don't forget, Sunday nights, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, whatever that is in your part of the world. Hopefully it's something not in the middle of the night. Yeah, I know in Australia, it's like Monday afternoon. You're already at work.
Well, luckily, but you can check us on replay.
Yes, you can. We do this podcast. You can find that wherever you find all your popular podcasts. And, of course, we're on social media. If you just search for Technorama Podcast, you'll find us in one shape or form or another. Until next time, Craig gives a binary high five.
All right. 101.